sporty greetings to all of our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young here in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
We told you yesterday about Tiger Woods and his performance over the weekend at the tournament at Torrey Pines in La Jolla, California. Woods finished tied for 23rd, but was optimistic about his health after finishing his first tournament in about 2 years. But we also mentioned that three players, Jason Day of Australia, Alex Noren of Sweden, and Ryan Palmer of the U.S. finished tied for first place after 72 holes. The three men moved on to a playoff. After Palmer was eliminated in the first playoff hole, both Day and Noren remained tied after four more tries. Darkness came, and the tournament moved on to day five on Monday, with no fans allowed in the venue. Only family members and reporters were on hand to watch Day win the tournament. Alex Noren's second shot on the sixth playoff hole went into the water, and Day took advantage to win $1.24 million and collect his 11th PGA Tour win. Day's approach shot landed a few feet away from the hole as Noren fell behind, having to take a drop after his ball was lost in the water hazard. Afterward, Day spoke about what it was like to play in front of a sparse crowd. He said he would have kept playing a few more days if it meant he could have won the tournament.
It was a little strange, but I mean, we did have a few people up in the stands, which was nice. But a Monday finish is not what we, you know, it's great to finish the tournament and all, but it would have been nice to finish yesterday with all the people there. But we, you know, myself, Alex, and Ryan hit some nice golf shots coming down the stretch in the playoffs. Going shot for shot was pretty cool with Alex over that five-hole stretch. And unfortunately, we just couldn't get it. You know, we just didn't want to give it up. And, you know, being able to come back this morning, it was really unfortunate for him to hit in the water, because I know how good of a shot he actually hit there, because that's really tough to go through a three-wood into a green like that. And it's almost, I think it's almost a blessing that I actually miss a fairway, knowing that I had to lay up and knowing that I, you know, kind of worked on that number before, you know, actually went out there. I was on the range hitting that exact same number. And, to finish, it was like on a Monday, it's kind of like eerily quiet, but it's a different feeling because, you know, I'd play till Wednesday if I need to try and get that win.
That's Jason Day of Australia celebrating his Farmers Open win on Monday in overtime in Southern California. Next up for the pro golfers, the Phoenix Open in Scottsdale, Arizona. Here on the sunny side of sports, we have a soft spot for soccer. We have some news nuggets to bring you, along with a chat later on the show with Washington Post soccer writer Steve Goff. But first, let's start with the news that the Olympic champion sprinter Usain Bolt of Jamaica has his eye on the pitch after announcing his retirement from racing last year. Bolt has a tryout coming up with Borussia Dortmund of the German Bundesliga coming up in May. But Bolt spoke Monday about his chances to have a professional soccer career at the Puma School of Speed in Johannesburg, South Africa. the Olympics 100 and 200 meter champion, told the assembled audience that he wants to see how he stacks up against international soccer competition at his tryout in Germany. "I can determine if it makes sense to do it or doesn't make sense. That's what the plan is," Bolt said. Bolt says it's a dream of his to play with Manchester United. Speaking of English soccer, there's news today that Ahmed Musa, the speedy striker of Leicester City, is going to be loaned back to the team where he made a name for himself in Russia. Musa of Nigeria is leaving the Foxes of Leicester City after two injury-filled seasons where he made just 18 appearances and scored only a handful of goals. He will join CSKA Moscow, where he scored 42 goals over 125 appearances. He played with the Russian team for four seasons before moving to England. CSKA says Musa will be a key part of their lineup heading into the remainder of the league season and the knockout stage of the Europa League tournament. Now on to a player who knows a thing or two about winning tournaments. That's David Beckham, the former England star who first became famous playing for Bolt's favorite team, Manchester United, announced on Monday that he would be exercising his option that was part of his MLS contract with the LA Galaxy to bring an expansion team into the top North American soccer league. Beckham will be the owner of a club that may be known as Miami FC, potentially set to start playing as soon as 2020. Beckham spoke Monday to an enthusiastic audience of Miami soccer fans from a confetti-covered stage.
"This is something that has been a dream for many, many years. This is a dream not just for us as an ownership group, for the commissioner. This is a dream for you guys, and that's the most important thing. Our fan support has literally been relentless. And that's what our club is going to be built on. We're going to make and build a club that you can be proud of. From the moment when I was 12 years old and I had a coach turn around to me and he said, 'You will never play professional football. You will never play for your country because you're too small, you're too skinny. It's not going to happen.' 25 years on, I made 115 appearances for my country. I won four different championships in four different places. I had a pretty good career. People say that wherever you are, wherever you come from in the world, this is a city that's built on dreams. Today, you made my dream come true."
That's David Beckham talking about his hopes to bring a MLS soccer team to Miami. Continuing our soccer talk today and sticking with MLS, we're going to check in with our friend Washington Post soccer writer Steve Goff. Goff covers the local MLS team DC United, which is moving into a new stadium down the street from VOA Studios here in Washington later this year. Steve also covers the USA national soccer scene. The USA men's team, as you may know, will not be in the field this June at the FIFA World Cup in Russia. Team USA only needed a tie against Trinidad and Tobago last fall to advance out of the CONCACAF group and instead suffered a 2-1 defeat in early October. If you want to mark your calendars now for the World Cup, the opening match is set for June 14th and pits the host nation against Saudi Arabia. I opened the chat with Steve by asking him about the recent MLS Super Draft. The draft started with João Moutinho of the University of Akron in Ohio being selected number one. Moutinho is a defender from Lisbon, Portugal, who helped the Zips of Akron to an 18-4-2 record last year before they lost in the NCAA semifinals to Stanford University. The fourth pick of the draft belonged to FC Dallas of Texas, and they chose Francis Etienne, the graduate of the Right to Dream Academy and a native of Accra, Ghana. He attended the University of Michigan and was one of the top offensive players in the Big Ten Conference. Just a few moments later, with the 11th pick of the draft, Dallas was on the clock again and chose Emma Tumasi of Wake Forest University in North Carolina. Tumasi spent 2 years at Wake Forest and scored 16 goals in 47 games. Tumasi was also part of the Right to Dream program. I asked Steve Goff of the Washington Post what he thought of these two players being selected to play for MLS's Dallas franchise.
Well, these players, many of them are coming through the Right to Dream Academy. And the Right to Dream Academy is a system set up in Ghana where an organization selects players and coaches them and develops them, and then they help place them in American prep schools. And from there, they often end up at major American universities to play NCAA soccer. Some of those then go on to the professional ranks. And that's what you're seeing with these two players and a few years ago with Joshua Yarrow, who's now with the Philadelphia MLS team. So it's been a very beneficial program for kids from Ghana.
I'm Dan Friedel in Washington in for Sonny Young this week. We're talking with Steve Goff, the soccer writer for the Washington Post here in Washington, D.C. Steve just mentioned Joshua Yarrow, a player who was selected high in the MLS draft a couple years ago, played here in the Washington, D.C. area for Georgetown University. Some thought going into the draft that there was a chance he could be the number one overall pick. Yarrow from Ghana played in high school in California, if I'm not mistaken, moved on to Georgetown and is now with the Philadelphia Union in MLS. Steve, what have you seen from Yarrow in the first couple years as a professional, and how is he adjusting to the game here in the professional level in the U.S.?
He's had to deal with a lot of injuries, and he hasn't played much, to be honest. So he's still in that professional developmental stage, I would say, just because he hasn't received the playing time that you'd expect. Injuries have set him back. These professional teams are very competitive for starting positions, for playing time. And if you get hurt and you're out for a while, it's going to set you back. So he's optimistic that this will be a healthy season, and he'll get on the field and play regularly for Philadelphia on the back line over the 2018 season.
Steve, one of the things that I saw on social media recently and the post-draft coverage was Yarrow being involved in welcoming David Ockham to the Philadelphia Union, who was traded over there recently. What does Ockham give to the Union that might help them move up the ladder a little bit in MLS and stay afloat as they challenge to get into the playoffs again?
A very exciting player, fast, physically fast, but also mentally fast. He can get up and down the flanks quickly. He finishes scoring opportunities. Very effective attacking player. Big pickup for Philadelphia to, you know, change their fortunes after some tough years. You know, dynamic player who's been with the Ghanaian national team at times, and someone I would imagine will have a major influence on the Philadelphia Union this season.
We're joined by Steve Goff, the soccer writer for the Washington Post. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young in Washington here on the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's take a look at the big picture in MLS for the upcoming season. For those of you in the audience who might not follow Major League Soccer here in the U.S. that regularly, the Toronto MLS team was the champion late last season, winning the MLS Cup. Steve, what can you tell me about Toronto's fortunes going into this new season? We've seen a lot of repeat winners in the history of MLS going back to the 1990s. Will Toronto have a chance to defend its title in the MLS Cup once again this season?
Yeah, they're clearly the favorite. They were by far the best team in the league throughout 2017. They won three trophies. They won MLS Cup. They won the Supporter Shield for most regular season points, and they won their domestic cup in Canada. So it was a big year for Toronto FC. They expect more big things this year. You know, it's a team with Sebastian Giovinco, an Italian attacker, with Michael Bradley and Josie Altidore from the U.S. national team, plus Victor Vazquez, a Spanish midfielder, who had a tremendous first season in MLS last year. I think, you know, clearly it's a long season. Things can change. Players come and go. There's injuries and all. But when the season kicks off in March, Toronto, no doubt, will enter as a favorite.
One last question about MLS. One of the stories that you've been following this winter are the fortunes of our local team here, DC United, moving out of their long-term home of RFK Stadium in one part of Washington, D.C. The new stadium is not going to be finished in time for the kickoff of the season. It's Audi Field, which is basically across the street from where the Washington Nationals baseball team plays, only about a mile and a half down South Capitol Street from VOA's studios here close to the mall in Washington, D.C. Has there been any resolution, Steve, to where D.C. United will play some of their early season games before the field is ready for its opener in July?
They have to play two games at home. Obviously, they can't play at Audi Field yet because of the construction. They are going to play, they want to play at a small, very nice park in the suburbs called Maryland Soccerplex, the first game anyway. There are some questions on from the league about whether that's the appropriate spot. It only holds 5,200 fans. So there's some logistical issues as well. The second home game will be played at the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland, which is about 35 miles east of Washington. It's an American football stadium, good size, the facility is great. It's a beautiful little town. The only downside there is artificial turf as a playing surface. But, you know, for one game, I think it's fine. The team hopes to, you know, square away the venues in the next week or so, and then they'll look forward to moving into the new stadium in the middle of the summer.
Let's take a look at international soccer now, 2018 being a big year with the World Cup coming up. Can you give me a couple of favorites and maybe a couple of dark horses to come out of the field and potentially reach the quarters or the semis later this year? Who are your picks for the upcoming World Cup?
Certainly Germany is the favorite. They're the defending champions, and they've been in great form for many years now. Brazil with Neymar, Argentina with Messi, Portugal with Ronaldo, France has a very strong team. Maybe England has a little something extra this time. You know, Mexico coming out of the CONCACAF region has a very strong team roster. So, you know, it's you know, Germany goes in as the favorite. You know, there's some big names that aren't there that you'd consider among the favorites in a normal World Cup. You know, Italy, Netherlands, they're not there. Chile has been one of the best teams in South America. They didn't qualify. United States will miss the World Cup for the first time since 1986. Cameroon isn't there as well from Africa. So, yeah, you know, there's a fresh look here for sure. Teams like Iceland has been a quality side in Europe, and they finally qualified for a World Cup. Panama is in for the first time from CONCACAF, though the expectations are very low for them in the actual tournament. So yeah, I think it's going to be an exciting, fun tournament.
That's our friend Steve Goff of the Washington Post giving us a rundown on some of the Ghanaian players making a mark on MLS and a look ahead at this summer's FIFA World Cup, which begins in Moscow, Russia in June. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
They're playing back.
A quick NBA news update for you beyond what's happening on the parquet. We want to let you know that five-time All-Star Blake Griffin is on the move, leaving the Los Angeles Clippers for the Motor City of Detroit to play with Coach Stan Van Gundy of the Pistons. The news came out Monday night, and it looks as if the Clippers are going into the full rebuilding mode after losing Chris Paul to the Houston Rockets in the offseason. The Pistons need to improve their fortunes in the Eastern Conference, having lost 8 in a row. For some more NBA perspective, I spoke with Boston Herald sports editor Sean Leahy about how Kyrie Irving has impacted the Celtics after his late summer trade from the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, look, the Celtics were already good. You know, they went to the NBA semifinals last year. But they only brought back, I think, 4 players because they totally just revamped the roster. And Kyrie Irving, I mean, you bring in a guy like that, he's a perennial all-star. He was just elected to all-star starter again last week. He's the type of guy that you build your team around. And that's what the Celtics did. I mean, they gave up significant assets in the trade to get him. They took advantage of a situation where he was in Cleveland, that he was unhappy playing with LeBron James. And they gave up a first-round draft pick. They gave up an all-star in Isaiah Thomas to get him and a couple of other assets. But they knew what they were doing. You don't make a trade like that unless you can do it for a truly transformational player. And that's what Kyrie Irving has been. Then the Celtics lost their other big acquisition, Gordon Hayward, on opening night to a grisly foot injury. And Kyrie Irving stepped up and said, you know, we're going to stay together. Then they rattled off 16 straight wins. And even two nights ago, I think they lost to the Golden State Warriors out in San Francisco. It was a terrific game. The Warriors are the best team in the NBA. They're the defending champs. And the Celtics measured up. I mean, this is probably the best game that they played all year, even in a loss. So, you know, that tells me that these Celtics, I think they're going to be here to stay. They're going to be a threat. I think they are a threat to take down the Cavs in the East this year, and we could see them right back out there in San Francisco in June for the NBA Finals.
That's Boston Herald sports editor Sean Leahy on the impact of Kyrie Irving on the Eastern Conference leading Boston Celtics. The Celtics won a 1-point nail biter last night over the Denver Nuggets. And we'll hear more from Sean later this week as he previews the New England Patriots' appearance in the Super Bowl this Sunday. And that wraps up the January 30th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Joseph Kabila of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC, has served the 2 terms permitted under the country's constitution. It is someone else's turn to seek office. A crisis ensued when Kabila failed to organize timely elections and stepped down. Following negotiations, Kabila's ruling party and the opposition coalition signed the Saint Sylvester Accord. President Kabila agreed not to seek a 3rd term or change the constitution. He would remain in office until the installation of his successor, following elections, which would be held by the end of December 2017. But there were no elections in the DRC last year, nor will any be held until December 2018 at the earliest. And now President Kabila's party is talking about changing the constitution to allow him to run for another term. The president's refusal to step down and the political machinations that have delayed elections over and over again have caused a political crisis, heightened insecurity, and triggered a series of street protests in which scores of people have been killed. On December 31st, the Catholic Lay Coordinating Committee organized peaceful demonstrations where security forces used excessive force against unarmed participants. Another peaceful protest was scheduled for Sunday, January 21st. Authorities prepared for the demonstration by preemptively shutting down internet and SMS services and forbade gatherings of more than 5 people. When the peaceful protest nonetheless took place, they shot tear gas and live ammunition into the crowd, killing at least 7 people, injuring nearly another 100, and arresting dozens. We condemn in the strongest terms the violence perpetuated by the DRC security forces on January 21st against church-led peaceful protests, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert in a written statement. We are appalled that the DRC government, including President Kabila, would employ repressive tactics and disproportionate use of lethal force against civilians, including religious leaders and children, exercising their democratic rights to call for credible and inclusive elections, she said. The use of lethal force against Congolese citizens and the cutting of internet and SMS services undermine the democratic process, obstruct implementation of the Saint Sylvester Accord, and contravene international human rights norms. We call on President Kabila to hold accountable security force members who fired on civilians or ordered the use of lethal force, and urge him and his government to ensure a peaceful and open electoral process so that credible elections are held as scheduled in December 2018.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
I'm Linor Moudou, host of Health Chat. Join us this Tuesday as we discuss cholera and what is being done to contain the disease in Zambia. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondence reports around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.